ora, welcome to Focus on Politics. I'm Jane Patterson.
And I'm Rowan Quinn.
I'm here.
Distressing scenes elsewhere as ICU becomes overwhelmed with COVID cases. Staff distraught and exhausted. But is New Zealand heading down the same path?
Look, I am assured that we will manage and we will cope.
But not everyone's convinced.
We're behind the eight ball here. If we get a sudden spike, particularly some of the DHBs that have only got, say, four ICU beds, we're in trouble.
This week, we take a look at what capacity there is within the health system to deal with increasing case numbers and whether the government can live up to its promises. They're at the pointiest end of COVID. Doctors and nurses caring for the sickest of the sick, people struggling to breathe, their organs may be starting to fail.
They will have been found to have low levels of oxygen in their blood, and those levels of oxygen may be becoming life-threateningly low. This is a really scary situation for people.
In the height of the pandemic, it would seem logical that those working in intensive care would be first in line to get what they need to keep New Zealanders alive. There have been hugely varying estimations of how many beds and the equipment that goes with them there are to care for those who need it most. And does a bed count if there's no one to care for the patient in it?
Without the nurses to provide the one-on-one care, that's the most important thing for ICU capacity and patient outcome.
Every COVID intensive care patient needs an average of five nurses, and New Zealand is 90 short right now, never mind the future. The Health Minister, Andrew Little, acknowledges that, but says 1,400 nurses have been given training to be able to step in to help if needed. Intensive care nurse Tanya Mitchell is the chair of the College of Critical Care Nurses.
I'm not sure the origins of the number of 1,400 surge nurses, because my colleagues in intensive care throughout the country are not seeing anywhere near those numbers of nurses being trained.
She says those who are doing the training are doing a four-hour online module, with some DHBs also providing a few days practical training.
It's important to recognise that there is a very basic training. So they're experienced nurses, but this training is very basic in terms of being able to look after an intensive care patient. So to get enough experience for an intensive care nurse to be able to look after a complex patient like we would expect to see with COVID, it takes 3 to 5 years of experience. So as you can imagine, a four-hour training package and a couple of days helping to look after a patient isn't going to equip these nurses to be able to look after an intensive care patient on their own. But what that does mean is they will be able to work in conjunction with an experienced intensive care nurse to assist with providing some of the basic nursing cares that are required in intensive care. So if we move to what we call a crisis model of care, which is where we have surge-trained nurses working as a team with an experienced intensive care nurse, the standard of care that we're able to provide realistically is less, and that will have an impact on patient outcomes and adverse events. And we've seen this internationally. There's data coming out from the UK that shows that there is an increase in adverse events, an increase and patient outcomes are affected.
Next year, when the country's open and COVID becomes part of business as usual on top of all the other ordinary care, do you envisage that at times you'll have to rely on that surge workforce then?
Yeah, so we are concerned that we will have to rely on that surge workforce, because there is also pressure to not only look after the patients with COVID, who we know have a long length of stay comparative to other patients. So that will make an increase on pressure on resources for intensive care, as well as the pressure to continue on with business as usual. That's things like operations for people who require intensive care, nursing after their operation, as well as the usual things that require intensive care like trauma and medical events. So it's unclear at this point what that's going to look like, but there is concern that we will need to use the surge workforce for 2022 to look after our business as usual patients as well as our COVID patients. But the thing is the surge nurses, they all have jobs elsewhere. So if the surge nurses are coming to work in intensive care, their job elsewhere is not being done, so it's not a sustainable model.
Rob Bevan is an intensive care specialist at Middlemore Hospital in Auckland, working at the heart of the current outbreak. But he's speaking here as the Vice President of the College of Intensive Care Medicine, which is meeting twice weekly with the Ministry of Health to try to lift ICU capacity. He says New Zealand already had one of the lowest rates of intensive care capacity in the developed world before COVID hit our shores.
Our intensive care capacity is not enough to provide best care to everybody who needs it under the conditions of business as usual. And by that I mean both for planned and unplanned care. What we will have to do is to incorporate COVID moving forward as another part of our intensive care workload. And we are going to need a sustained and targeted investment in intensive care capacity to A, move New Zealand up that ranking, and most importantly, to be able to achieve the best possible outcomes for all of the patients who need us going forward. But COVID is going to be an added part of that, most likely for the foreseeable future.
We've heard from people sort of leading the health response to this outbreak that COVID numbers in intensive care aren't what they might have been because the vaccination rates are getting high. I mean, is this something that we still need to worry about?
Well, yes, absolutely, because what we have achieved so far has been at the expense to a degree of some of the business as usual throughput that we have had across the country. The strict public health measures that we have lived with throughout the country over the last few months are relaxed, then it is highly likely that the hospitalisation and intensive care numbers will rise. And our ability to cope with that is going to be dependent on getting those vaccination rates as high as they can be. But as I said, even despite vaccination, there is going to be a burden of COVID that people will need hospitalisation and intensive care for that we need to add on to what we were doing before.
So where now from here? Andrew Little insists there'd be capacity to operate about 550 beds if and when needed.
ICU and ICU capable beds sit at about 289 across our total hospital network, and there is surge capacity available if you stop other planned care and discharge some patients who could be safely discharged over a matter of a couple of weeks. You can increase that to 550 beds across the whole hospital network.
Would you have the staffing capacity to surge to 500 beds?
Yeah, the Ministry of Health advises me that as a consequence of the additional training that has been done since August last year, roughly 1,400 nurses trained to work in an ICU environment, and don't get me wrong, they're not fully trained ICU nurses, but they are nurses trained to work in an ICU environment under supervision. This was the plan that was arranged since last August. That is in place, and so therefore we can safely say that that capacity is available.
At 500 beds though, that's nothing else happening in the hospital, that's staff being brought in from everywhere else, that's all hands to the pump. So isn't that crisis numbers?
That would also mean that we have probably roughly 200,000 COVID patients across the country. No, none of the modelling is saying that.
However, a recent New Zealand Medical Journal article concludes there would only be enough capacity to stand up about an extra 67 ICU beds, fully staffed and fully resourced. An assessment backed by Rob Bevan.
Intensive care bed numbers can be counted and reported in different ways, and some of those are more meaningful than others. The most meaningful would be the actual numbers of patients we can provide best ICU level care to today with staff who are currently in post and trained and working. And so the number that we have for that, and that is based on a paper that has been peer reviewed and released this week in the New Zealand Medical Journal, is 176 across 24 hospitals, of which 15 are dedicated paediatric beds. Now, that number rises from 176 to 280 if we incorporate the 104 physical beds that are not staffed at this point. And there are many concerted efforts by DHBs supported by the ministry to close that gap, primarily with nursing staffing. Any number greater than 280 involves what we would call surge capacity, and that is caring for patients in a way that does compromise that best model of care. And that, on our survey in that paper, surges up to approximately 540. But that is achieved through drafting in non-ICU staff to help us look after these patients, by moving extra beds into the spaces that are designed for one bed, and by potentially spilling into spaces that are not normally used for intensive care. But like I say, that is a crisis short term and largely unsustainable model.
National MP Shane Nariti says ramping up to 500 ICU beds would have dramatic consequences.
That surge relies on cannibalising other units, other staff, other units that know how to manage a ventilator, like coronary care, neonatal intensive care, SCBU units. You take all the staff from there and put them into ICU. That's not tenable. Furthermore, it doesn't change the fact that we don't have enough ICU nurses. You can have all the beds you like in the world. If you don't have nurses to run them, 5.3 nurses a bed, it's orphaned out. And what we know from specialists on Friday is that instead of the hundreds of beds that Andrew says we've got, we've probably only got about 67 to surge to.
The Minister says that's been addressed.
We know that there are workforce issues that are putting the health system under pressure at the moment, and we know that there are a lot of vacancies across the system. So on nurses' pay, for example, we've concluded the collective agreement negotiations, and that's seeing more money in nurses' pockets. We're deep into the process for the pay equity claim. That will result in a significant increase in pay again for nurses, and pay equity claims for other health staff as well ongoing at the moment. In addition to that, the Ministry of Health is working with DHBs on a recruitment campaign for nurses and other health workers. To the extent that we're reliant on people from overseas, we've got the guaranteed 300 places a month in the MIQ system at the moment, to the extent that that is needed.
Have you had any advice that would suggest that there's going to be a shortfall?
Certainly advice to say that the system will continue to be under pressure. That is why, you know, we have held out to get up to the vaccination levels that we've got. You know, we will have a vaccination level at one of the highest levels in the world before we start to relax restrictions. That's why the COVID protection framework, the traffic light system, has restrictions for unvaccinated people. This is about making sure that, you know, we keep as much pressure off the health system as we need to, but people can be assured that if they need hospital-level care, then they will get it. If there are major spikes in big outbreaks, and it means we have to manage other patients, non-COVID patients, those who, you know, are relying on planned care, we have to continue to defer that, always reluctant to do it, but if the system has to do that, they will do that to ensure that those who need that immediate level care for COVID will get it.
But Shane Nariti says even if New Zealand could get nurses to ICU in numbers, the extra surge training's woefully inadequate.
Maybe 7 to 10 years of nursing before you get an ICU nurse that is capable of managing a ventilator, or generally you'd ask them to be able to manage two sets of different types of ventilators and ICU equipment. So when Minister Little says, oh, I've trained up 1,400 ICU nurses, no, you haven't. What you've done is you've given them half a day's online training and half a day on a mannequin. In no shape or form is that an ICU nurse. They'll be valuable, don't get me wrong, but valuable for turning patients in ICU and what I call nursing cares, but not nursing management.
So could you count those trained up nurses in the 5.3 ratio as part of a resourced ICU bed?
No, you could not, because those 5.3 nurses are a nurse who would be in one-to-one or one-to-two care by themselves, actually managing.
As we head into the traffic light system, it's difficult to predict exactly how many cases there will be, how many hospitalisations, and how many deaths. Senior health officials say cases are expected to pop up around the country, but are playing down the likelihood of a sudden surge. However, the most recent modelling lays out the worst-case scenario of 16,000 cases a week. And what worries ICU nurse Tania Mitchell the most as we look towards 2022?
So there's two main things that worry me. Firstly, the care of the patients that we can provide. We want to be able to provide the standard of care that we're used to providing, which is an excellent standard of care that we provide now. I'm concerned that we will not be able to provide that standard of care and the impact that has on patients and their family. The other thing that I'm concerned for is, even for business as usual, we're short staffed from a nursing point of view. We're relying on nurses to work on their days off and their annual leave just to continue on with business as usual at the moment. And so with COVID on top of that, that's not sustainable. Nurses will end up burnt out, and then we will lose more nurses, and our already under-resourced profession will be even in a worse situation.
Part of what makes dealing with COVID so difficult is the ongoing uncertainty. The obstacles are acknowledged, the most significant the supply of specialist nurses, but there's certainly no consensus on how ready the hospital system actually is. Clinicians and those working on the coalface are clearly worried about not only what they're potentially facing, but also what it means for patients at their most vulnerable. When asked about New Zealand having one of the lowest rates of ICU capacity in the developed world, Andrew Little lays the blame at the feet of the previous government for underfunding health. In the end, it's up to him to make sure everything possible has been done to prepare and to take responsibility for the success or failure of the health response. That's Focus on Politics. Thanks for joining us. I'm Jane Patterson.
And I'm Rowan Quinn. Mā te wā.